Drabblecast B-Sides, Episode 85, Nothing Changes, by Robert Reed. Robert's a Hugo Award-winning science fiction author and short story writer, with Alone being his 200th professional sale. His work has appeared in Asimov's, Fantasy and Science Fiction, Sci-Fiction, Drabblecast, and many more. He lives in Lincoln, Nebraska. This story is a Drabblecast original, and it's read to you by the most lovely of whores, the Word Whore. So without further ado, we bring you Nothing Changes by Robert Reed.
A work colleague suffers a stroke and gets whisked to intensive care, where an experimental neurostimulant is pumped into the blood. The drug can be therapeutic, and he recovers. Sort of. Brain activity rises and rises, his skull jammed full of electrical activity. But the stimulant has a second purpose. By making synapses fire hard and hot, his remaining cognitive skills can be accurately measured. Can he ever recover? No, he cannot. Every test proves what everybody already guesses, and that news is followed by complications and a funeral. A funeral I have to attend, because he's a work colleague, who I never liked much, by the way. Though that doesn't mean shit to this story. 18 months later, my Aunt Liddy is playing bridge when the clot hits. By day's end, she's declared brain dead and available. And her second husband does what's legally right. He holds an auction. The high bidder is one of those startups that exist for this kind of business. The specific damage in Liddy's bridge playing make her extra valuable. At least that's what I hear at the funeral talking to my cousins. Oh yes, they loved their mom, and they make a point of describing how sad they feel. So sudden, so awful, the usual commiserating noise. But it's important to also mention how their stepfather is getting rich in the process. Before long, they're shooting looks at poor old Carl, who I've always liked, by the way. Not that I know him well, but he gives me good vibes. Without a body to burn or bury, there won't be any graveyard ceremony. But the immediate family has been invited to view Liddy inside her new home, which sounds intriguing to me. I don't ask to get included. Instead, I tell my youngest cousin that she always looks great. And how does she do it? I tell my oldest cousin how kind and sweet his mom was to me, which isn't exactly the case. But who's to know? Then, later, standing alone with the middle kid, I ask about her real dad. Why isn't he here today? Because he wasn't invited, she admits. Which I already know. But now I'm wading into the family morass, claiming that I liked her father plenty. And it's so rude not inviting him. So yeah, I'm buttering them like 3 slices of fresh bread. In the end, everybody wants me included. You're practically one of us, I hear. My youngest cousin and her idiot husband invite me to ride along with them. But that would get ugly later, so I come up with an excuse to drive myself, and I'm first to slip away from the funeral. The point here is to beat everyone to the hospice. Carl finds me sitting in the biggest patch of shade outside the main entrance, waiting patiently. Being a cordial sort, he thanks me for coming before bringing up the subject that I might be wasting my time. There's all sorts of health issues to limit who goes indoors, and he's already pulled strings to get himself, Liddy's kids, and spouses included. That's hard news to take. My cousins arrived just in time to see how real sadness looks. But then, the middle cousin's husband, who always despised Liddy, offers me his precious slot, which is exactly how I figured things would go. I refuse the offer just long enough and just loud enough, then weepily thank him. And inside we go, carrying our expressions and our secrets, and everything else that makes us important. The hospice is an old facility remade. I don't know if the owners are the same people who bought Liddy, but whoever runs the place is obviously catering to this new clientele. Their business model begins with NDAs and protective gear, as well as strict requirements about not bringing in recording devices, phones, or smartwatches, and street shoes, too. Then, to be extra safe, the world's most intimidating nurse/guard will remain beside us for the duration of our 20-minute visit. One long hallway is lined with closed doors, except for Liddy's door, which is propped open. The room beyond is surprisingly vast, considering how its only resident can't do or see anything. There are new power outlets and Ethernet ports in the otherwise empty walls. More corporate assets will be arriving in the months and years to come. 8 corps is total, according to my count. Dressed in biohazard gear, it's hard to act casual or even stand next to each other. I do the very best I can. Aunt Liddy has a special bed that allows her to be left almost standing. Her eyes are closed, hands at her side, oversized white robes covering up the tubes and ports that keep the body healthy enough, feeding the brain clean, oxygenated blood. Death agrees with the old gal, that's my first thought, and it never leaves me. She remains a strong lady. Physically and every other way, too. I was impressed by that toughness when I was little. Liddy was a lady who knew how to fight, and she happened to be smarter than people assumed, looking at her hard scrabble upbringing. Not unlike me, I like to believe. My favorite Liddy moment came when I was 10 and full of myself. One day I happily claimed that the world was advancing. Life relentlessly getting sweeter and sweeter. That attitude earned me a hard stare from my aunt. "Fuck, honey," she said. "The world might feel different in a few places, but nothing changes. Not far or for long, it doesn't." That blunt, unsentimental mind is gone now, and all of her thick red hair has been shaved away. What replaces the mind are billions of synapses working harder than ever. And instead of hair, a network of sensors and buried probes manipulate and record everything happening inside that soulless cavity. What this work accomplishes would be a fine question to ask. But the forms we signed at the front gate forbid us from even bringing up the subject, which is why everyone is silently, methodically chewing on the topic. Human nerves are astonishing, tiny, interlaced, and quite a bit different, architecturally speaking, from computer parts manufactured in factories. But even though they run a million times slower than silicon, there are a few mathematical problems that don't care about speed. Say you want to make an economical forecast. It's easy math, except when you include the human animal. Unless our feet are to the fire, we don't act rationally. Sure, AIs have been thrown at the models, with assumptions running roughshod over the whole mess. But if you're researchers hoping for a Nobel, or hedge fund gurus, or a corporation looking at future markets, you can now rent 1,000 otherwise useless sacks of brain, borrowing their native software/reflexes, creating virtual societies that might be a little better than the old models. Does this magic actually work? I don't know, or particularly care. But the experts have convinced themselves yes, and that's all that matters. Liddy's family fills her end of the room. Her kids talk to her as if she hears them. The two spouses feel obligated to comment on the magnificent technologies. Only Carl is actively weepy, loss and guilt churning inside him. Eventually, my youngest cousin has had enough of his pain. "I don't want to be here anymore," she announces. And with everyone watching, she shuffles out of the room, her hazmat gear bouncing around her like a fat rubber ball. I had no idea my cousin was going to do that, much less when. But I'm ready. With our nurse/guard temporarily distracted, I grab up Carl's hand with both of mine, and I coax him to reach out, touching his dead wife's shaved head. Think of all the good she's doing. That's what I tell him. On its own, his gloved hand lingers. Our nurse/guard notices the illegal touching, but before anyone can be reprimanded, Carl diplomatically says, "Yes, it's time to go." And we're practically chasing my cousin down the long empty hallway. Outdoors again, wearing nothing but funeral clothes, the family struggles to say the best words to put this ceremony to a natural end. The spouse that didn't go inside has questions. Lydia's described in clinical detail, to which he sort of gasps before saying, "God, isn't it something? How fast the world is changing." I had worn my hair up for the funeral, but that's finished now, and I make a point of slowly pulling the bun apart and combing the bright red curls with my fingers. I'm the only one here with my aunt's hair, which Carl is watching carefully, while the others are studying Carl. Everything is obvious to everybody now, particularly with me standing close to the rich old man, who I have always liked, by the way. Believe me, really. I'm not the awful kind of awful.
And that was our story. Hope you enjoyed it. Special thanks to our kick-ass episode artist, Scott Schaefer. Scott's always had an interest in the strange, inventive, and bizarre. As a junior high art teacher, he does his best to inspire his students while trying not to freak them out too much. Not too much. Thanks, Scott. And thank you, our Drabblecast Premium special subscribers. Without you, we couldn't do the podcast, and we greatly appreciate it.